Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our first session of the OPA Physiotherapy Conference. My name is Jim Foley, and I'm the session moderator this morning. I'd like to remind everyone to silence your cell phones if you can. Put them on vibrate so that no disruptions. This session is being recorded, so questions will be repeated by the presenters so that those can go onto the record as well. This morning's session, we have two speakers today of 30 minutes apiece, and the break session will be after that, so encourage you to stick around for the second speaker as well. And this is track C, so it is perceived risk of falling in older adults with type 2 diabetes, psychometric evaluation of risk perception questionnaire. And I was thinking it was Janelle. Janelle Gravel will be presenting.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I'll be presenting on how to assess risk perception of falling and the implications for fall prevention. So the Public Health Agency of Canada defines a fall as a sudden and unintentional change in position, resulting in an individual falling at a lower level, such as an object on the floor or the ground. One in three older adults fall each year, and falls are the leading cause of injury-related hospitalization among older adults, and they cause 95% of hip fractures each year. So older adults with diabetes are at an increased risk for falls over and above that of older adults without diabetes due to various complications, including diabetic peripheral neuropathy, diabetic retinopathy, autonomic neuropathy, diabetic foot ulcers, as well as cognitive decline and polypharmacy. A study of older adults with diabetic peripheral neuropathy found that old individuals had reduced walking speed, cadence, reaction time, as well as peripheral sensation and balance. So what do we know about cognition, falls, and individuals with diabetes? So individuals with diabetes are at increased risk for cognitive decline which increases their risk of falling. So a study, a meta-analysis, found that individuals with diabetes were at a 2.5% increased risk of vascular dementia. We also know that treating the various complications associated with diabetes, including hyperglycemia, as well as micro and microvascular complications, also leads to polypharmacy, which increases their risk of falling as well. So what are the impacts of falls at an individual and a societal level? So falls lead to injury, which can range from bruises to fractures and even death in severe cases, as well as negative mental health consequences, including fear of falling and depression. In terms of the individual's families, older adults who are seriously injured require a lot of care, and caregiving can be quite physically and psychologically demanding as well. And the direct economic cost of falling is also pretty high, about $2 billion per year, which is estimated to increase to $4.4 billion by 2031. So what is known about fall prevention? So fall prevention usually entails a multifactorial risk assessment, then followed by a tailored intervention to target the individual's specific risk factors. However, one barrier to fall prevention is individual's risk perception. So an individual who doesn't believe that they're at risk for falls may be less cautious and less likely to adhere to fall prevention behaviors than someone who perceives that they're at risk for falls. So what is risk perception or perceived risk? So this is a multidimensional concept that considers the probability of the disease, or falls in this case, the consequences, and then how important is that risk to the individual. So risk perception on its own is not enough to affect health behavior. However, it does begin that contemplation process where the individual considers their competence to engage, to form an intention, and to ultimately engage in fall prevention. So there's evidence in the cardiovascular literature to suggest that perceived risk and self-efficacy work together to effect behavior change. So a study by Rimal identified four distinct groups of individuals. So responsive individuals had high perceived risk and high self-efficacy. Individuals who were proactive had high perceived low perceived risk but high self-efficacy. Individuals classified as avoidant had high perceived risk but low self-efficacy. And if you were indifferent, individuals had low perceived risk and low self-efficacy. And what they found is that individuals classified as both responsive or proactive were significantly more likely to think about and use cardiovascular-related information. So this suggests a link between perceived risk and health behavior. So I'll now describe the development and evaluation of a risk perception questionnaire and then sort of discuss what the implications are for fall prevention in older adults. So this questionnaire was developed by Richardson et al. Using a conceptual model based on the health belief model as well as the risk perception literature. The questionnaire consists of 20 items in 5 subscales. So the conceptual model includes external factors such as healthcare providers, the individual's family and friends, as well as the media and their social and physical environment. Individual factors include knowledge, age, and history of falling. And then it also includes self-efficacy and activities of daily living and instrumental activities of daily living. And then individual perceptions, which include perceived susceptibility, perceived severity, and perceived control. So following the development, this questionnaire was presented to researchers with mobility and aging research expertise for feedback about the contents of items, and then it was presented to older adults for feedback about the content and wording of items and the comprehension of items. So in an early pilot study, this questionnaire was tested in older adults, and what the study found is that 60% reported a fall in the past year, but only 40% perceived that they were at risk based on the questionnaire. So this suggests some mismatch between individuals' actual risk for falling and what they perceive their risk to be. So this is part of the questionnaire itself. So it says, the first question, I feel that I am at risk of having a fall. So individuals state their response on a scale of 1 to 7, with 1 being strongly disagree and 7 being strongly agree. Then the questionnaire goes on to state, please rate if you feel the falling factors will increase your risk for falling. So the first one is a fall in the past year, weakness in your legs, difficulty moving around the house or community, as well as using a cane or a walker. And it continues, and there are 20 items in all. Individuals then get a score out of 140, with a higher score meaning a higher perceived risk. So the purpose of this study was to determine the test-retest reliability of the questionnaire, which is the degree to which it produces consistent or stable results over time. The internal consistency, which measures the degree to which all the items on the questionnaire are measuring the same underlying concept. Construct validity, which is the degree to which the questionnaire is measuring what we wanted to measure, which is risk perception. And then the factor structure, which gives us an idea of how the items fall into different subscales. So the eligibility criteria were adults 55 years or older. They had to be community dwelling, have a self-reported diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, and be able to follow instructions in English. So at time one, we obtained consent and then collected demographic information. We then administered the risk perception questionnaire, the rapid assessment of physical activity, as well as the FALS Efficacy Scale International. Then at time two, approximately 2 days later, we administered the RPQ again to determine test-retest reliability. Then 6 weeks later, at time three, we administered the RPQ again, and at time four, 2 days later, to determine the test-retest reliability when administered by phone. So the mean age of participants was 68.6 years. 60% of the sample was female, with a mean duration of diabetes of 13.2 years, and one fall was the median in the last year. So let's look at the results from the risk perception questionnaire itself. So a test is considered to have excellent test-retest reliability if the ICC is greater than 0.75. And in this case, in-person ICC was 0.78, and by phone it was 0.82. So it has met the criteria in each category. In terms of internal consistency, a test is considered to have good internal consistency if Cronbach's alpha is between 0.70 and 0.95. And for this study, it was 0.78. And the RPQ also demonstrated a moderate correlation with the false efficacy scale international, suggesting good construct validity. And then the factor analysis revealed a 5-factor structure, so 5 subscales. And these subscales were self-efficacy, the effect of information and education on risk of falling, attitudes and beliefs about falling in relation to aging, the importance of fall prevention, and risk factors. So what does this all mean? What are the implications for clinical practice? So the RPQ can help to inform both patients and clinicians about perceived risk of falling. It can also be used by clinicians to sort of gauge or estimate how cautious their patients are likely to be in everyday life. And it can help to inform clinicians about how likely their patients are to engage in fall prevention behaviors if they are given advice. The RPQ can also be potentially used to stratify individuals at different intensities of interventions based on their level of perceived risk. For example, an individual who has high perceived risk and low self-efficacy may need a more individualized approach to fall prevention versus someone who has both high perceived risk but also has high self-efficacy. And adding perceived risk may be a more comprehensive approach to fall prevention and assessment than using a performance-based tool alone. The RPQ also has implications for community and population health. So the RPQ could be used as a self-management tool where older adults can monitor their balance and overall risk of falls. And given the expanding role of PTs in Ontario and the heavy caseload, self-management could be a great way for individuals to monitor their risk of falls on a large scale. In terms of future research, given the good psychometric properties thus far, it suggests that the risk perception questionnaire may be a useful tool. However, further research is needed using different patient populations as well as larger sample sizes. That's the end of the presentation. Thank you very much. And then I'll take any questions if anyone has about the presentation itself or the questionnaire or perceived risk. So that's a good question. For this study, yes, I only included people with type 2 diabetes, just because that was a population I was interested in, and I know that they're at increased risk for falls. But the previous pilot study has included older adults in general, so it can be used in different populations. Yeah, I just restricted it for this particular study. So if possible, both, because the SFALS efficacy scale only looks at just self-efficacy, right? Whereas this one is more inclusive, so it looks at individuals' knowledge, influence of external factors, etc. So the SFALS efficacy scale is a good scale and is validated in large populations, but the risk perception questionnaire sort of covers a wider area. So it'll give you a bit more information about, but you are right, they are highly correlated. Yeah. Sure. Yes, sir. So the question was, why was the test reliability slightly higher in over the phone than in person? And so the difference wasn't a significant difference, but one thing that the ICC is affected by heterogeneity. Our guess is that there was greater heterogeneity by phone, and this sort of reflected in the ICC, but the difference is not significant. Yeah, just slightly higher.
I know you didn't necessarily stratify given the numbers in there, but right. Did you notice any trends in terms of advancing age affecting anything in a particular manner?
Yeah, so the people, there were a few people. Sorry. So the question was whether there were any differences in perceived risk with age, so advance in age, people with older adults having higher perceived risk. So there weren't many people who advance age. There were a few people in the late 80s and 90s, and some of them did have a higher perceived risk. But what also people who had a history of falls in the past year, they were more likely to perceive themselves at risk versus people who didn't. Yeah, so it was more history of falls than age alone. They're not up here, but so the rest of them talk about risk factors and ask about the influence of healthcare providers. Does that influence your risk of falls? And then the last few asked about self-efficacy, so moving around your house, moving around the community, that kind of stuff. Yes.
And you said exploratory factor, you came up with five factors. I don't know if I missed it. Can you tell me what they were?
Yeah, sure. So the question was, what were the five factors from the risk perception questionnaire? Yeah, so there was self-efficacy, effect of information and education, attitudes and beliefs about falling, risk factors, and importance of fall prevention. Yes.
Do you think you'll develop a shorter form of this questionnaire?
So the question was, do I think we'd develop a shorter form of the questionnaire? Based on the preliminary results, no. It's only 20 questions, which isn't too long, but that's a good point. At this point, no, but that certainly is a possibility. At the back and then on the other side.
What was your inclusion criteria for the number of falls a person had to have? Did you say it means one fall?
So the question was if there were an inclusion criteria for the number of falls. So there wasn't a pre-stated number of falls. So one individual was over 55 and had diabetes. But the median falls in the population was one fall.
So I'm just questioning, like with one fall, that would influence results of perception of falling versus, you know, the 60% at 40% split that you gave at the very beginning. If there was one fall, that would be like a lot of people could have just not have perceived that they have.
Right. So just to clarify, the 60-40 was a different pilot study. But that is, like, it certainly is a factor that history of falling will affect perception of falls, right? So we expect that it would affect, but there was no inclusion criteria for limiting the number of falls. So there were some people who had no falls, there were some people who had one, some people who had multiple. So it just, yeah. Yes. Right, so the question was there a correlation between number of falls and what the perception was? Is that correct?
Yeah, or like their risk of falls, like if they have balance impairments or weakness, things that would already put them at a higher risk, but maybe they haven't had one yet, to see if, you know, their perception actually matches up with their risk.
Right. So the question was whether there were analyses done to see if the individual's perception matches with their balance and history of falling. So that wasn't presented today, but it was part of another study with this data. So what we looked at, we collected information on the questionnaire, which is perception. Then we administered the Berg for balance, and then we also recorded their history of falls in the last year. So in a separate study, we did analysis to compare to match. So in about 60% of individuals, there was a match between actual balance and perception and history of falling. And then the other people either underestimated their risk or overestimated their risk. Yeah, so that's a good point. Yes.
You discussed in one of your slides about people that had high perceived risk and then high self-efficacy and the different matchings of those. So in your questionnaire, can you look at just the questions of self-efficacy to have an understanding of their efficacy? And is that because you also said maybe you should also use the efficacy scale. So
Right. So we didn't do specific analysis with self-efficacy. But the last three questions of the questionnaire specifically address self-efficacy. So we could do analyses where we look at self-efficacy and perceived risk. We also looked at the correlation between the false efficacy scale. Just because the false efficacy scale has been around longer and it's been validated, right? So we know it's a valid measure. This one is a bit newer, so that's why we sort of compared it against that measure first. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janelle, for that excellent and informative presentation. We appreciate the work that went into that. But judging by all the questions that came about, there's a high degree of interest, so well done.